Ladies and gentlemen, after
Heresy.
All, okay, there's always heresy, so shoot heretic first, then we'll come back to the podcast, I guess. Are we finished?
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, then, now that we shot the heretic, we are finally back from, let's say, a long hiatus, even though it wasn't a long hiatus. Problem is, well, we made two really awesome podcasts. One with Peter from Next to the, however it's called, Ghost of Town. And the other with Adam, a.k.a. Dragonus77 from Twitch, a really popular EDH streamer. Only problem is, well, my recording hardware seems to be... was possessed by demons, so I get rid of it. And here
and
we finally are.
My computer died.
Oh yeah, that was also a thing. So basically the demon that was possessing Nyxia's laptop came into my mic. But now all the proper rituals have been made... All the equipment has been burned, and here we are, finally back.
And hopefully in slightly better quality.
Well, let's not go too far. As long as
one
we don't
sound...
Yeah, as long as we don't sound demonic, I think that's a big step forward. Once again, we apologize for not making any content, but we've tried. We really, really, really tried.
Especially me and I getting something that's not dead.
Yeah, that was a big thing. Also, I'd like to thank all the people who have been listening to us. Apparently, there has been a lot of people listening to those two podcasts we actually made. Like, 1,000 people. What the hell?
That's incredible.
I'm actually shocked. I was like, okay, when the March or April, I can't remember, statistics come in, it's going to be like 300 people. I'll believe that. But no, apparently a lot of people listen to. So I'm really humbled.
Let's just keep up the good work, I guess.
Or work. Again, let's not go too far.
Any kind of work.
If you want to listen to quality podcasts, well, I'm sure you'll find one sooner or later. For the time being,
but
I guess... If you want what?
Yeah, but if you want to listen to creation podcasts, then I'm sorry, but this is the only thing you're getting.
Oh, I mean, only EDH focused creation podcast.
Do you know any other podcasts in Croatia?
That's a good point, actually. So, yes, sucking on bitches, we're the first.
Whee!
Anywho, as usual, here comes the commander of the week. What do you have, Nyxia?
Reaper King.
Oh, God.
Reaper King punished people. And punish them firstly because they don't play graveyard hate cards in their decks. So I'm going to say it was a teaching experience because I just taught people to play cards they're not playing.
Yeah, you should always play graveyard hate. But Nyxia, what did they do to deserve the Reaper King treatment?
They were nagging me to play. I didn't feel like playing. So, and then they like, especially because there was just one person, and they were like, well, come on, let's play. And I said, I don't feel like one-on-one. I just don't prefer one-on-one. And after some time, they found another person, and then I joined, and I was like, oh, fine.
Okay.
And then,
yeah.
Actually, no, maybe it was because because I don't really play Reaper King that often, and I got him altered to look like Scarecrow from Batman.
Okay, I need
so
a picture of that. I really
more.
Need a picture of that.
Sure, I'll see what I can do about that.
Also, could you upload it to some image or something like that so I can actually share it with the viewers, I mean listeners. Everybody
well,
likes
we'll
a good
discuss old. About that. We'll discuss about that sharing part when you...
I can always put a not safe for work tag on it. No problem.
Okay.
Anywho, what did you do to make sure nobody gets to play Magic except you?
Well, I actually didn't do anything. It's their fault they actually didn't do anything either. I mean, I was just placing some scarecrows in play, then I killed them all, and I just played my commander. He survived the turn. My graveyard was untouched, so I just emptied the vaults. And would you look at that? Oh yeah, and I put that frog guy. That's not actually a frog, is it? It's not. River Kelpie? That's not a frog.
It's a frog-ish thing.
Yeah, but River Kelpie and Empty the Vaults drew me quite a few cards.
All of the cards.
And since one of the cards it brought back was Lodestone... No, not Lodestone Golem. The Mycosynth Golem.
Oh.
So suddenly my scarecrows in my hand were
free.
So I just played some of them. Oh yeah, and the card that surprised me how well it actually worked was Skill Borrower.
Oh.
Skill Borrower.
Oh.
Borrower. Whatever. Because, you know, you practically play with a good card from your top.
So what did she get abilities from?
First, she got her abilities from that Reshaper chick that returns an artifact, then puts an artifact into play from your hand.
Oh, could you also read what the Skill Borrower does for the fans?
Oh yeah, Skill Borrower? Borrower? Borrower.
Yes, Borrower.
She is a 2 and a blue for a 1-2 or 1-3.
1-3.
Can't remember right now. 1-3 that has, that you play with your with the top of your library revealed. And she has all activated abilities of an artifact or creature card on top.
Yes, that's what it does.
And first she copied that shape. What's she called? Shaper? Oh, oh my god. Come on.
This is quality podcast, people.
I'll be back on the name of that card later, but also later Scarecrow, because Scarecrow is actually the best Scarecrow in Magic, by far. Especially good when you have a Persist Scarecrow.
I don't know, Chameleon Colossus is also a good Scarecrow.
No.
1 point.
No, it's not.
It is.
It's not an artifact. It doesn't cost 0 mana.
Oh, that's a point. But still, it can become arbitrarily huge.
But it also costs double green instead of no colors at all.
Oh, yeah. If only you played, you know, a 5-color deck or anything.
Yeah, I like to think more. I like to think of it more like a...
Brown deck?
Esper? No, Esper with splash everything else.
Oh, yeah. You mean the rest of the two colors?
Yeah, whatever they might be.
So, what happened then?
Well, I cleared the board. Just that simple. And suddenly I have this machine that is called Scarecrow. Actually, that's it. Scarecrow and any persisting Scarecrow, because you just sacrifice it for a card. You draw a card. Because of the River Kelpie, you draw another card because that persister comes back. Then you sacrifice it for another card. For that's 2 mana. And then when it's in the graveyard, you just bring it back for 4 mana. And you kill the cards. That's 2 cards with just those activations. And then you can sacrifice more cards and kill another thing. It's really fun. I mean, some for me.
Yeah, for only one person involved.
And hey, when if people play Shatterstorm or cards that just exile all graveyards, I'm okay with that. I mean, that deck isn't allowed to do such sick things.
Yeah, if it gets to turn 7 or 8 untouched, you're really on the horse.
Oh, that also includes if I draw well, because I don't really optimize the deck. I just put in a lot of Scarecrows and recursion cards. I don't play tutors or really meaningful draw cards.
Why should you have Scarecrows?
Oh yeah, another really good idea. Do not let... wow, I can't believe how bad I am. Do not let that Red Goblin Commander, Planeswalker...
I was going to say Granzo, but it's not Granzo, it's Dereti.
Dereti. Dereti, yeah.
Yep.
Don't let Dereti get to 11 loyalty. Just don't.
What? How? How did they let that happen?
Scarecrows. They scared them.
But, oh god. Now I really don't feel bad anymore that they actually died horribly.
Because they focused Tezzeret. Because Tezzeret was actually a meaningful threat.
I mean, that's kind of legit, because Tezzeret needs to die ASAP, but still it's Dereti. Why
yeah, but he would, like, he plus 2 for discard 0, draw 0 most of the time.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
That's plus really good. Yeah, I mean, with your deck, that's actually good. You don't mind the card.
I said discard 0, draw 0,
oh.
So it's, like, nothing.
Oh.
And,
oh.
But cycling Scarecrows is really good, because you can get them with Scrap Mastery, Living Death, Open the Vault, you know, that kind of thing.
All those, you know, symmetrical cards.
Yeah, fair cards.
Totally fair card.
My fault, they're not playing instant speed, discard your hand so they can abuse my
so
cards.
What, Quicken for one with nothing?
Yeah, should be doing that, obviously.
I mean, that's the pro EDH play. That's what they do on the Pro Tour EDH, right?
Oh, yeah.
I kind of wanted... One part of me wants to get one with nothing just for Alesha deck. Just, you know. So people see it and be like, what the hell are you even doing?
Yeah, and then that works once and never again.
I mean, you just do it for style points. You don't do it for, to be efficient.
Well, because... some things can even be super efficient, like with Karador.
Give me a minute, I have to go throw up a bit, because, oh, no. Although I could do it in my Cedric's deck and don't forget it at all, that could be a thing.
Yeah, it's like basically 4 mana, to since you, when you have Cedric's out, just 4 mana to dump everything and return anything.
I just have to find out how much is one with nothing, to be honest. It's almost $4, what the hell?
I'm gonna play Thing in the Ice.
Also, you don't need to quicken one with nothing, it's already an instant.
Oh. Professionals.
I never said I was a good Magic player, I always said the contrary. Why is it $4?
Well, obviously it has to be one with nothing with your wallet.
I was going to put it on my wants list on PokéTrade, but no? I'm not doing that? Seriously, when did it spike in price?
I think we're giving one with nothing a little too much airtime.
Ah, I guess so. So, is it time?
What was your commander of the...
Well, since I've been marooned on the seaside working my summer job for the whole week, I haven't had any chance to play real EDH now. But I had a real blast playing EDH the last day I was in Zagreb, in the capital of Croatia. Basically, Alesha managed to... high-low for a bit while everybody focused on Prosh and other monstrosities. And, of course, the two mono-red players. You know which ones.
Yeah.
Basically, Krenko and Furfuros. They first killed each other. Put each other on the low enough life total so I can just swing in for the win, because that's the thing I do. And after that, I just play Keldon Fire Bombers to destroy Prosh's mana base, and that was it. Turns out when your deck has to have like 15 mana to operate optimally, and you just have 3 lands, well, my deck is just going to be better with all my low mana drops and things in graveyard.
Should totally get Keldon Firebombed.
I mean, I think I'm going to get it out of the Alesha deck. You want them? They're in Japanese, so...
No. I used to play them. And like...
People were angry?
Yeah, when you have Planeswalkers, you don't care about lands.
Ouch. Also, I found out that there is one card in my deck that gets me killed almost all the time. You know what that is? That's Oppression. Nobody likes that. Do you even know what it does?
It oppresses people.
But in which way?
I'm guessing it doesn't allow any attacks.
Oh, no. You can do anything you want. Whenever you cast a spell, you have to discard a card.
Oh.
Seems that people don't like doing that. Ain't that weird? Ain't that weird?
Okay.
But yeah, seriously, that's... if people don't gang up on you in like one or two turns, you're just winning the game easily. Because Alesha is tuned to play out of the graveyard. Most people's decks aren't that much. Especially if they're playing mono-red. Graveyard is like dead to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and black. Black can't get rid of Oppression also.
Yeah, but you don't mind having your stuff in graveyard when you're playing black.
Well, yeah, some of the times. I mean, depends on the deck you're playing. If you're like...
Karador?
Yeah, but that's like a little three color. That's not, just not fair to compare. But Karador is like, hey, I'm playing this card. It's a 4-mana artifact that allows me to play 2 mana and discard my hand to counter a non-creature spell.
Oh, no.
Jeez, Diksha, that sounds terrible. Here, I'm going to cast this non-creature spell.
Oh, no.
I discard my 6 cards. I counter it. Aha, you just got 6-for-1. Oh, look, Karador costs 3. I cast everything. Yay.
Oh, God. Why did they print Karador? Really, why?
So that people... So that green... What's
Abzan.
That?
That's Abzan.
Oh, yeah, Abzan. So that Abzan players can have fun.
Yeah, because they never had fun before, right?
Well, with, like, Deneb.
Or Doran, the Siege Tower.
Those are, like, different kinds of decks. You don't really...
Actually...
Yeah, you play Reanimation in Deneb, but...
I played against the guy years ago, before Commander was really a thing, and he used Doran just so he could play all of his legacy staples in that deck. Doran didn't really matter. He was just like, there, I have the colors now. Doran, go cry in a corner.
And worst case scenario, it's a 3-mana 5/5.
Yeah. He played even the Knight of Reliquary in that deck. Or whatever that...
Well, still a good card.
That was a really good card. I was like, damn. Plus, he managed to have Crucible of Worlds and Wasteland in the deck, so, you know.
Now that Knight of Reliquary is even better with the frog.
Yep. Yeah, why not play Abzan and play both, right?
Yeah.
Why Abzan?
Have fun all day, every day.
So, play Abzan in all of the formats, I guess.
Yeah.
Except Vintage?
Oh, especially in Modern. I mean, I love Abzan in Modern because I play Tron, so it's like a good matchup for me.
You don't mind that?
Yeah, play all the Abzan you want.
I mean, you don't even mind when they gain infinite life, right?
No, that makes it even more fun for me.
I mean, you can either reset the game, you can mill them out with Ulamog.
Well, not even that. Even if they get rid of your Ulamog, you can still go like... You can play an Emrakul, and then play the old Ulamog to kill your Emrakul, and then you have all your whole graveyard in your deck again, and they don't. So eventually they will die.
Wow. Tron sounds like so much fun.
Because even if they like get infinite life, but like one swing with Emrakul just erases their board.
Yep.
They can have all the life they want. They're never coming back.
And then Ulamog swings again. I mean, Emrakul swings again.
Yeah. They just can't play anything.
Wow. That's fun. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, except for the part where they have that blood artist and then I die. Oh. That's not fun.
Or if they're actually...
That's a combo deck. I prefer the mid-range deck.
Yeah, I mean, but people don't usually play that mid-range deck anymore. Because, hey, combo!
Yeah, they do sometimes, but... Yeah, for mid-range, I think that Jund is a bit better.
You know what also sucks when you're playing against Abzan in the Modern Tron deck? When they're actually infected and they just kill you. How would that feel, like, Niksha? How would that feel?
Be quiet.
So, basically, story time. Niksha went to a Modern tournament and things actually looked pretty good for him because a lot of the field was all those mid-range decks that Tron just loves to tear apart. However, the people Niksha met were just aggro decks like Infect and things.
Yeah, so it went like... Oh yeah, it was like the week before I went to the Modern tournament with my post-banned Tron and people were like playing... Ancestral Vision and the new Thopters, the swords and the meek things. It was like, oh yeah, unbanned cards are overpowered. But I was just like, yeah, but you see, this card is called Lodestone Golem. He's restricted in Vintage. So let's see what happens if I play three of them in Modern. Turns out it's quite good.
Yep.
Since you have so much mana, so you don't care.
And they don't.
And, you know, I 5-0'd that tournament. And then I was like all cocky and full of spirit. I came next week for another Modern tournament. Okay, first matchup, Affinity. just to mention, I don't play a standard red-green Tron. I just play mono-green Tron and I don't play mass removals because I don't have any of them. I mean, I have one... Oblivion Stone, but that's about it.
Ooh.
So I just replaced it with like Nest Invaders and similar other 2-drops and Sakura Tribe Elders. So people just get really confused. People used to get confused when they would like Swords to Plowshares, my guys.
And, you mean Path to Exile?
And Ghost. Yeah, Path to Exile and Ghost Quartered my lands. And I always had Forest. I could have like 5 forests in play. What is this magic? What is this madness?
People play basics in Modern? Heresy!
In Tron, because usually you have like one basic.
Yeah.
But no, I had like 11 of them.
And...
It was super fun. And then, yeah, this last one, it was like, okay, first game, Affinity. Okay. Okay, I lost.
Of course you did.
next game, in fact, I was like, hello darkness, my old friend.
I came to dying again.
I lost the first one, like, easily, I just lost it. And, but the second one actually managed to put three Lodestone Golems out, and then in fact just can't, it doesn't do anything. And everything costs three more. They just don't play anything ever again.
And then?
And the third round, man, it was so close. I was one turn away from placing my Platinum Angel in the battlefield and just sealing the game because he didn't have any form of removal in his deck.
Yeah, what's he gonna do then?
But he went all in with the Glistener Elf into that 7 mana +6/+6 with Delve.
Oh, yeah. Embiggen Orb.
He went completely all in. I had 6 cards in my hand. I could have had, like, 3 different removal cards I sideboarded in. And he just went... No, he didn't even check my card with Gitaxian Probe. He just went, I attack for 1. I let it pass. +6/+6. I have no mana on tap. Then I was just like...
Sadness.
It's fair. Okay, nice, fair deck you got there.
I mean, it's in fact. Nobody ever said that that's going to be a fair ride.
And then third game. I was really frustrated about that. And then third game, it was Storm. I can do absolutely nothing to that thing.
You can cry.
There was nothing. I could do no. I just watched them. I just watched them for 2 games, how they were dirtling with their mana.
Wait, but isn't public masturbation a crime in Croatia?
No, not if it's indoors.
Well, apparently.
And then I was like, okay, that was a bad matchup as well, but now I can get my 2 wins. I'll settle for 2 wins. And then in the 0-3 bracket, guess what I met? Affinity.
Of course.
I was like, who meets Affinity when they're 0-3? It's just like, no, why? It's just like destined to meet me there.
Well, you got cocky for the previous win, so...
And they just wiped the floor with me, and then the fourth round I managed to get a win against them.
Yeah, I
think it was an absent deck.
Collective Company. I came to the shop about the time you were beating the kid, but your face was like, I don't even care about this win. This is just...
Yeah, I also had the really skillful start of having 3 Tron lands in my hand and the Karn. Yeah, that was so skillful of me.
Yeah, I know.
To play a land, and 2 Karn. It was like, I was amazed at myself how good I was.
I mean, that's all your years of training as a judge and all that.
Of course.
I mean,
who needs Isle of Ugin when you can top deck like a champ?
I mean, you don't play Tron to be an ultra skillful guy. Not to say that Tron doesn't require skill, but it's less skill than, let's say, Storm or something like that.
Yeah, but you see, the thing about my Tron is that it's actually quite interactive because I just don't go into that land, blow up your stuff, Karn, and I win. I play guys. I play Sakuras, I play Nest Invaders, I used to play Angry Jesus. I mean, not Angry Jesus. It's more Nicolas Cage.
Oh, okay. Skin Shifter.
Yeah. So I used to play Nicolas Cage. He was fun. I used to play Swords. I used to play all except the Sword of Body and Mind.
As a blue player, what is this interactivity you're talking about?
Oh, you wouldn't know. Oh, this interactivity is called placing a Sword of Fire and Ice on a Wurmcoil engine playing against Mono Red Burn.
But wait, how did that leave the stack?
They don't use counterspells.
But you don't play anything that doesn't use counterspells. I'm confused now.
I was thinking about putting spell bursts in my Tron deck. That's like an infinite counterspell.
I mean, you just have to pay like 86 mana to have your spell not countered. It's fair.
Or in case of Remand, you don't pay anything. You just deny them a turn and draw a card.
Yeah, tempo plays.
Yay, 2 mana Time Walk. Hooray.
I mean, Time Walk is usually 2 mana.
Of course.
If you're playing, you know, Vintage and have all the money in the world. Which is basically called playing Vintage. Should we, like, move on to some other topic?
Yeah, enough of the broken cards in Modern. How about the broken cards of EDH?
So, the topic I was thinking about you know those overused EDH cards that everybody plays? Well, let's find some janky replacement for those things. Like, my first example would be Swords to Plowshares. That's a card that everybody plays. And it's like $4 card, something like that.
I think it's even less. It was like reprinted a million times in the last couple of years.
But why not play a lesser version of that? Why not play Condemn?
Well, people do play Condemn.
I mean, of course,
but
they do. Why
not
shouldn't
as much as Swords.
Swords are infinitely better, but you know what's also a card that can give Swords a run for their money? Kinda. Reality Shift.
Yeah, but that's only if you play blue.
I fail to see the issue.
What if you're playing mono white? You can't play that.
Again, give me a couple of minutes, I have to throw up again. I remember that mono white deck I did. So kids, just remember, never play mono white in EDH unless you really have to. If they have a gun pointed at your head, think twice and then say, I'll do it. Because no, really, it's not worth it.
The card I see like almost all the time somebody plays blue is Deadeye Navigator.
Oh. I play it in just one deck, so...
Yeah, but it's like, you just play it.
It doesn't
matter about the rest of your deck, you just...
I don't go infinite with it, if you could believe it or not.
Yeah, but you don't even have to go infinite. You can just get a Venser on the board and just be obnoxious.
Oh, no, you know what I do?
Being obnoxious the same as being infinite?
You know what I do with Deadeye Navigator? So I play my Cedrus deck and I unearth something with Cedrus. And then I Deadeye Navigate it. When it's done attacking.
And you keep it forever, yay.
Yep. What? It's
because that's fair as well.
Oh, man. I just had to invest like 6 mana plus 3 mana to unearth plus 2 mana to actual Blinket.
Yeah, but then again, Magic is based on unfair interactions and making them work.
I mean, that's more work than you just being Deadeye Navigator Polychrome. Ha 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 ha. I'm such a good Magic player. This actually requires some, you know, setting up.
Oh yeah, just to make sure that everybody understands, this is not us whining about cards that always beat us. This is actually cards
that you see too much of.
That we see too much of. We might be wrong, but this is just our opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's our opinion, so it's most likely wrong. But, you know.
Yeah, we're also whining, but that's not the point.
Actually, I don't mind that I navigate that much. You just have to kill it while the trigger's on the stack.
Yeah.
Of course, they're playing blue, but that's another thing. Maybe they play a really not counterspell heavy deck like I usually do. I mean, three decks I have don't have much counterspells in them.
Also, Solemn Simulacrum is like on almost everything.
But it does. It really shouldn't be in so many decks, honestly. It's not doing that much.
It's actually doing too much.
Depends.
Well, if you're like an aggressive deck, yeah, you don't play him. But if you're anything else, you play him.
If you're a green deck, do you really need
it? Because he draws a card after he jumps.
The thing is, with green, you actually have a decent draw engines in deck. Even in mono green, you can get draw.
This guy is still like super valuable for that.
He is valuable, but he isn't like super great. I'm going to jam it in every deck I have. Honestly, that's my opinion.
I'm just saying that we're not talking about like super broken.
I'm just stating opinion. I don't think that Simulacrum should be in so many decks. It doesn't actually do that much for most
and
decks.
He's also just a 2/2, so he doesn't even put pressure.
If you can recur it a couple of times, yes, play it definitely. But if you're just having it as a really shitty rampant growth and draw a card, it's not worth it.
Well, it's actually better than the rampant growth.
But you know what I mean. It's four
mana.
Yeah,
if you're playing it just for
those two
the
things.
Ramp, then like I don't know, play Ondu Giant if you're like that. He's even a bigger body, so he can actually put some pressure on.
And he has a bigger butt, so he can block much better.
Yeah.
I mean, there's if you really need... I was going to say Explosive Vegetation, but you're already in green, so you really don't need ramp that much. But Sword of the Animist, it's much better for the ramping part.
Yeah, it's actually... That's actually a... that's actually it could be a decent replacement.
For that's this. An underrated card. That's so underrated of a card. Sword of the Animist.
Yeah, because people think, oh, he needs to have a board that doesn't die so easily. But the thing is that there's almost always a board. It's really not that hard to have a board at any at some point.
Plus, it's suicide token at least. Why not?
Yeah.
I've been playing that card in a couple of decks, and I'm amazed at how much it can. I usually, when I play against, let's say, Tessa's approach deck, it's a heavy ramp deck. If I have the sword out, I usually have as much or even more lands than she has. And that's not supposed to happen in a Mardu deck. That really isn't.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's a good replacement for Solon, and much better in my mind. Also, Wrath of God is a really popular spare, but it's like $5 and above, right?
Yeah.
Why not play Day of Judgment?
You can also get the... You can play that... You can... Well, because they can regenerate.
But that's not a big of a
better
so much.
Question.
Yeah?
Better question. Why not both?
What I mean?
Why not
if you're building on a budget, that's what I'm coming at. Oh, and you don't have that money for the overused card. Even the route is even route is much better of a replacement if you don't have money for the Wrath of God.
Yeah, and route got super cheap because of the ring print.
Yep, and it has much better art, honestly, in the conspiracy.
Has Elish Norn in it.
And the flavor text is just like, nah, I got better things to do. But yeah, Day of Judgment is Day of Judgment route. That 5 mana from Khan's Wrath. What is it called?
The 3 and double white.
Yep.
Destroy all creatures and permanents attached to those creatures.
Yes. Plus, that spell is really good against like a Rafik deck or something like that.
A Voltron deck, yeah.
Yep. Or wait, you were playing Ural the Mistwalker. Wow, guess about that. By the way, that's a guy I haven't seen in a long time.
Also in Zendikar, there's that also for 5 mana destroys all non-land creatures.
Oh yeah, Planar Outburst.
Planar Outburst. And you can also make it a land creature.
Yeah, why not?
And smash somebody's face after you clear everything.
Also, speaking of Nyxia, what happens when you Planar Outburst or any other vacant spell on the Vestvale Abbey?
Well, it's a creature.
Yes, but when it transforms, what happens to the...
Well, now it's a demon with counters on it.
But what is the power and toughness?
The demon.
What is the power and toughness of the flipped...
9-7.
No, I mean when you awoken the land before it was a demon, and now you transformed it. What happens to the power and toughness?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. It's like, it's a 0-0
yes.
When it's just Westvale Abbey. But when it's awakened, and if you transform it, it becomes a 9-7.
Nope.
What do you mean?
No. I'm going to find you on Ask Judge's Tumblr. That was a huge thing about that.
What? Really?
Yes. Yep. It's a layering question, actually. Wow.
That's
what?
That's not... I'm just not going to go into that. I mean, yeah. If I think harder about it, it does make sense from a rule standpoint, but it doesn't really make sense. Because, you know, you just compare it to, like, the normal lands, the man lands that you pay to make a guy out of them.
Yeah, but this is not different.
If they're awoken, they're not 0-0. Still, they become bigger. Yeah, I know it's a different thing because that awaken thing is character defining, and when the card transforms, it doesn't really alter anything. It's just a different card, but the thing that altered it still has, you know, it's over the card, so yeah, it makes sense it's still a 0-0.
I'm trying to find it, but Ask a Magic Judge Tumblr, I don't know how to use the Tumblr, so that's a problem.
So we can just conclude that you don't awaken Westvale Abbey ever.
I mean, you do, because it becomes a 4-4. When you know, turn it around, when you transform it, but it still has those indestructible haste, the lifelink, those things.
But you don't want that. You want a 9-7 that has all that stuff on it.
I mean, if you have to, if this is a pinch, well, why not? No, I'm going to find it later and put it in the show notes if I'm able to find it. What are we talking about? Oh yeah, some more not overrated, but overused cards. Now, the people use Grave Pact a lot. I've seen it played a lot.
Yeah, it's just a really efficient
card. It's a really efficient card, but it's like $8 or more. And I'm kind of a cheap person, so I'm not shelling that much of money for that thing.
Well, you can always use Erebos' Decree.
Dictate of Erebos, you mean?
Dictate of Erebos?
Yep.
Not Erebos' Decree. Whatever did I thought of?
Bad things. You meant Decree of Annihilation or something like that.
I haven't done this in a long time.
But basically, I even like Dictate much more than Grey Pact, honestly. Much less
but
mana.
It's like, it's one mana more, but it's instant speed, so they don't expect it.
And the black commitment is so much less. That three black mana can be a problem.
Sometimes, but it's also better for...
Devotion?
Devotion, yeah.
I mean, if you're playing with that, but...
If you're playing Dictate of Erebos, you're obviously playing Erebos as well.
I don't play him.
Right? Okay.
Because I don't play him because he doesn't serve any function in Alesha, so, you know.
What do you mean he doesn't? He stops that Oloro guy from cheating with his healing.
Commander damage is a thing? Plus...
Well, sometimes your commander gets meddling maged.
Oh. Then I guess I'm just going to have to make my... whatever the demon is called that put his life to one. Oh yeah, Master of Cruelties. Mm-hmm. Guess I just have to play him. So, Oloro, you were at 8 life. Well... Fun thing I have to tell you. You aren't. I would feel like a huge dick for playing Master of Cruelties, but then I remember Oloro players exist, so I'm like, well, I'm going to continue being a dick. You know what?
Yeah, variants will sort it out.
Yeah. Plus, everybody will hate on Oloro, hopefully. The whole table. Because worst thing...
Only if they're being a dick.
But you know that if you leave him alone, you'll be like just, so Oloro, what are your life at? 80? What? What? You were just sitting there and I was like drawing cards and here I am. That's what happens. And then everybody has to try to kill him, but then he sweeps the board like 3 times in 3 turns.
And plays all his guys that work with lifelink.
Because of course,
yeah. Amounts of health. Yeah.
So yeah, PSA, if you're playing against a Oloro player, just kill him. I'm not even saying kill him in Game of Magic, just kill him.
Oh,
like, on the table.
And we have a rule that whoever plays Oloro, he's writing down the life totals of everyone.
That's a good rule, actually. Only problem is when they run out of ink in the pen.
Then they're still responsible for that.
Of course. So, while thinking about those overused EDH cards and their replacements, I started thinking about, you know, Mizzix of the Is Magnus. That's the right name, right?
I'm going to say yes.
And I would like to build that deck, but I don't have money to shell out for the pre-con yet. So I was thinking about what could be somewhat of a cheap replacement, even though it's not Mizzix. So I thought of Melek first, because that's an obvious comparison. But then I was like, Melek is kind of boring and he's 6 mana, and I don't like that. So I was like, I should put Jorian. She does completely different thing, but she likes to also be a spell slinger. So
yeah, that deck could work. Like, it's actually kind of similar.
Yep, it's just not X spells, but it's much of cheap instant spells.
Yeah, but you don't want to cast more than 2 per turn because
if you don't have to.
Yeah.
So I was that's when I started thinking about it, and then I figured out. I want to build a Jorian. I got really excited for her, so I would like to hear your input. What would you put in a Jorian deck?
Well, first I would go and search all cards that have Ruin in their name, because I would try to make like an Explorer deck, because that's what she is. I would like go through ruins and any cards associated with people researching the old ruins and make a flavor deck out of that.
So, Tadadel? Tada Adel, basically Inquisitor.
Yeah, Tada Adel, and you know, I just can't think of them right now. But I would do my research, and I would try to make a flavor deck. Because if not, then I would just make a Storm deck.
Well, I would like to, you know, be somewhere in the middle of those. I don't really want to build a full-on Storm deck, but I really don't want to build a full-on flavor deck because it won't be as fun to play. I think it will be
just. Get a lot of surge cards.
Well, that's a thing.
Surge cards are really good with Jorian.
So I put a lot of things on just regular blue-red things on my want list in Puka Trade, and some things started coming on, like the new Jace, and I think he'll be fun, because he's an all-around good guy. Scrying, returning creatures, that huge dick emblem, if I ever get to it. Also, Niksha, please never put him in your Super Friends deck.
I told you, I don't have that deck anymore.
You'll get tempted sooner or later. If I had a doubling season, I would be tempted. Anywho, our good old friend Bane Najjar will also be in that deck, because, come on.
It's a Brain in a Jar.
You have to play Brain in a Jar.
Just do it.
Yeah. I wanted to have a deck to play a Brain in a Jar, now I finally have it, so... It's not a really efficient card, but you know, I can always cry.
Yeah.
There is also Cyclonic Rift, because Cyclonic Rift...
isn't that like an overused card as well?
It is.
Every blue deck ever just plays Cyclonic Rift?
It is, but I'm madly in love with that card, so I'm going to give it a pass. I honestly giggle whenever I have 7 mana, and I'm like, I want to play it right now, but it's not really good. But I really want to play it, but it's not a good time, but I want to play it. I attack it with my 1-1 token. Okay, return it all. Haha, okay. I get a little bit trigger happy with Cyclonic Rift.
It even gets Hexproof guys back, because it doesn't target anything.
It doesn't care. Awesome.
Well, it cares if it's yours, then it doesn't touch it.
Oh no, now you have a board and they don't. Whatever are you going to do? So
and that's what main phase 2 is for.
Also Dissipation Field, I'm going to finally be able to play Dissipation Field.
Oh, are you now?
Yeah, because I like the people not having creatures that are attacking me.
You can actually also play Joyra of the Gitu.
I actually could, and I could make her not be broken.
Yeah. I mean, she's good with Jorian because you get a free spell and then you cast another spell and draw a card.
Yeah. I could
just
also...
make sure not to play anything broken because then people will hate you. Don't want that necessarily.
I could always put some big creatures and also big braids. You know, the blue braids.
She doesn't cast anything, does she?
No, but still, if I'm going to have Joyra, I'm going to have braids as well, so I can be, you know... Nice and not nice, whenever the occasion rises up. Oh, and I'm also going to play our good old friend Niv-Mizzet, the both versions. The broken one and the Draco Genius.
Well, are you going to have them both in play?
Well, why not?
That's a flavor of rule violation.
Yeah, I still don't understand why can I do that. Why can I play one Niv-Mizzet and the other one, they're just like looking at it and like, hi there,
looking good. Bro.
Looking good, I know.
Oh.
And what blue deck would be finished without the Factor Fiction?
Without the Factor Fiction, you can play Epiphany of the Drone Yard.
I actually intend to play that as well. And Steam Augury. Because...
Isn't that too much?
No. The thing is, I'm crazy in love with those Factor Fiction effects.
Yeah, but you don't really need Steam Augury.
I don't need to, but I want.
Oh.
I was going to say I'm going to play Wrath of God in this deck, but... I kind of need finishers in this deck, don't I?
Finishers. Finishers would be something like...
Graveshot?
Fall of the Titan?
And Graveshot, yeah. I want to build some kind of a Storm Shell inside it, just so I can have another venue of winning.
You can also play that staff. That staff that imprints an instant for 2.
I'm blanking out the name right now. Damn, I'm dumb. Isaac and Scepter.
Yeah, that. And be really obnoxious with it. And the win condition is everybody concedes.
You know what's also a card I could play? Ignite Memories. Now that's a card you haven't seen in a while, have you?
Nope. I don't even know what it does.
So, for 4 and a red, it's a sorcery. Target opponent reveals a card at random from his or her hand, and then gets damage equal to that card. That card's covered mana cost. Storm.
Oh, I remember.
You remember the deck?
I remember that match.
Yes,
that epic match where he had like, oh my god, that it was like, was it Worlds or was it a Pro Tour?
So, it was Worlds, 2007. Paul Finkel versus Nassif. It was the semi-finals, it was game two of their bout. It was a three round match. I mean, so what's his name? Damn it, not Nassif, but the other guy. I just said his name.
Finkel.
No, it's not Finkel, actually. I misspoke. And people are actually yelling the name right now, but I can't remember it. The guy who's rapping in The Gathering.
What?
He was in the prison for LSD and all that. Wait, I'm going to find it right now, because I'm really ashamed right now. I should know this. Patrick Chapin. Yes.
Oh, Chapin.
Yes, Chapin. So Chapin won the game one easily. And game two, he was supposed to win. He ignited memories for five, right? Five copies.
Five or six, something like that.
No, five, five copies.
Five.
And Nassif had two spells that costed, or three spells that costed one mana, and ignite memories in his hand and something else. So if he reveals ignite memories just once, he's dead, because he was at nine life. And all the five times he revealed the one or two mana spell. And then...
Yeah, that was insane.
What was more insane, the following turn, Nassif comboed out.
Yeah.
That was the thing. The Chapin was like, okay, now we're going to combo out, right? And yep, upkeep, Lotus comes in and all that. Boom, 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 you're dead.
Yeah, but the way he... But the tension, that those epic reveals, each one after the first two, then each one was just like carefully revealed for maximum suspense. And the last one was just like, Chapin said, okay, flip this last one, no slow roll, no nothing, just flip it and slam it on the table.
Yeah.
And he just flipped and slammed it, and he lived.
I'm going to put that amazing in the show notes, because everybody who's playing Magic has to see this match. That's one of the matches you appreciate how good of a game Magic is, and how exciting actually it can be, even though it seems like a boring game. It's not really a huge spectator sport, but moments like this.
Yeah, but it's like, it was just because there was that random chance of everything.
Yeah.
It just brought the tension up.
It's always games like this always happen when Nassif is playing. Remember his cold shot at Pro Tour Kyoto?
No.
So it was game five. He was losing and he was playing something with Cruel Ultimatum. So he needed to top deck Cruel Ultimatum or else he loses. So beginning of his upkeep, he's like, oh, I'm preparing to draw a card. I'm going to tap mana that I need, but I'm going to tap it like in my upkeep. In my main phase. Mm-hmm. And I'm just tapping it to see what mana I need for Cruel Ultimatum. Draw a card, look at it. He didn't even look at it, he just slammed it on the table. Cruel Ultimatum. I'm also going to link that, because that's also a game you really need to see. And he did that, and he continued to go and win the whole Pro Tour.
Wow.
And Nassif always has games like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's in Hall of Fame. I mean, he makes you be really excited and giggly for the game that we all so much love and enjoy. Whenever you think
That could actually be a theme for, like, next show or something.
What? The moments?
No, you... I mean that part with the RNG.
Yeah, sure, RNGesus. We all pray to him.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but...
Well, spoiler?
I really want to go on a bit storm-heavier route now. Not full on.
And play Ignite Memories.
Of course. I'm going
and to just find that moment when somebody has, like, two lands and an Ulamog in his hand.
Yep.
And just reveal his Ulamog. Just reveal his land five times in a row.
Oh, and speaking of, you know what? Two cards I'm going to be playing in this deck.
I'm going to say not Yokel Hops.
No, not Yokel Hops. Even, but no, no.
I guessed it.
So dual caster mage and writer of replication. So I'm going to copy that ignite memories a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So you only have a bloody little elf in your hand. You're still going to die.
Yeah, that's like interesting how, like, giving an effect that was normally just a random spell, giving it Tutu body suddenly makes it better.
Yep.
With the dual caster mage.
Dual caster mage is a fun card, but then I remembered today while I was doing menial things at work. Wait, how does it work with Writer of Vocation? Oh no. You can do it, like, yeah, as many times you want, right?
It's like Splinter Twin all over again. What?
But this requires much more badass. Actually, it isn't even...
But it's Commander.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You get more mana.
But kicking Writer Replication, playing Dual Caster Mage, and doing it on Ignite Memories, that's actually kind of hard to do. That's, like, really hard to do.
I remember that...
Quicken, I guess?
That Rite of Replication is absolutely disgusting. It disgusts me how good it is on Reaper King.
I was just going to
say. It's disgusting. No other word. Just disgusting. So I don't play it.
You should put it in your deck just for the... Okay. You're all behaving to me like dicks for the last 5 games we played. It's time. Nobody has any permanence but me. You know when it's really disgusting? When you're playing 1v1.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, you don't get to play Magic today.
Oh, speaking of disgusting things, also Mana Maze. This turns out to be really, really annoying.
So tell to our listeners what Mana Maze does while I facepalm.
Mana Maze is a 1 in blue enchantment that says that players can't cast a spell that shares the color with a previously cast spell that turn. So basically it says that if I play Reaper King... nobody can play anything that isn't colorless that turn. So he can't. So he actually can't be countered at casting spells. But it also really, really throws any kind of weird plays from mono or two color decks. I mean, they play their commander and they can't play a card that turn anymore. It's really good for me because I can play an artifact card which doesn't have a color, so it negates that mana maze.
I'll be right back, I have a phone call. Muting right up. Guess who's back?
Back again.
Emperor's back. Tell a friend. Anywho, we were at how broken things are that involve right replication.
Yeah, but we only have...
That's a lie. You can...
Yeah, I mean, there are others. I remember there being a card that abuses it if an enemy has it in their graveyard.
Chancellor's Sphinx or something like that.
When it enters the battlefield, it copies instant or sorcerer, sorry.
You know,
yeah, so it punishes people for playing Rite of Replication.
You know how I discovered that combo?
By accident.
You know which accident? I was playing Duels of the Planeswalkers against AI in an, I think it was a Plane Chase game. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to get another Sphinx. Oh, wait, I can get an. Oh, this is stupid. This is stupid. So I continued to do it until I had like 50 copies of the Sphinx. Because I had to.
Yeah, just saw the opportunity.
I mean, I was like, how much can I do this for? Oh no, I can do it as much as I want. But... how often do you discover stupid combos in Duels of the Planeswalkers?
Yeah, that's like, oh wow.
I was really happy that day.
You know, that's a shame that, you know, that this Magic Duels, that free-to-play game, that it doesn't have or Commander or Plane Chase or any of those fun formats, only two-headed.
I mean, you really can't put Commander in there.
Why not?
Because you have a limited amount of cards you're going to put in there, and you have all the limited interactions you want to have between all those cards. There is a reason why it looks so pretty, but it doesn't have all the options that MTGO has.
Yeah, I know. But hey, good news! I heard on somewhere that they actually employed, that they got some new employments at their digital part. So they're probably going to make MTGO better.
AKA actually playable and not a really broken thing.
They're actually going to pay people that make it. They're actually going to give them reason to work.
I mean, anti-Jew, it has a lot of potential. And now they have to step up their game because Hearthstone is going to chew them up if they don't really step up.
Oh yeah, that this whole digital card game market is really growing really fast.
Yeah, and Hearthstone is really beating MTGO. I mean, you play MTGO because you really love Magic. That's the thing, and you don't have so many opportunities to actually, you know, draft or play with people around you.
Yeah.
Also, it can be really a lot of fun to play EDH anytime you want. I did that a lot.
Or if you want to play Momir Basic.
Oh, Momir is so much fun. I actually know a guy that actually made a Momir, you know, in real life. You know how many boxes that guy had to actually play it? Yeah.
Oh.
Aliona, damn. I mean, yeah. Really, damn.
So, anything else, or...
Just one more thing. I have to say that I'm finally redeeming my Alesha deck. I'm finally going to kick the last white border card out.
You hate white bordered so much?
I hate white bordered so much. Because it looks ugly. It looks ugly. So the Blinding Angel I had, it was the only copy of Blinding Angel I had, and it's a really good card. Especially when you can sacrifice it, do it all over again, and all those things.
But it was white bordered.
It was white bordered, and I was like, I like the card, but why does it have to look so ugly? And finally, I fixed it. I'm getting a Japanese one.
Kind of makes you wonder why they even went back to white bordered cards when they did black bordered cards. It's like nobody ever told them that black ones look really nice.
Some people actually liked it.
Or that the black border was just like for premium sets.
No, premium was for foils. Black was for foils.
Oh yeah, that one. That part
in
too.
In 7th and 8th, I think it was only for foils.
Yes. And foreign cards, I think.
Oh.
There were some foreign editions that were completely black-bordered.
So you had to get your hands on those.
Like an Italian copies, yeah.
Ugh, Italian. Also, one thing I pondered about, and I actually listened to it on... So Many Insane Plays podcast. They're basically a podcast that delves with vintage. They do it on a bi-monthly basis. And they made a suggestion, you know, all those gold-bordered cards.
Yeah.
Like Border Black Lotus that are really cheap and all that. They should make that legal in vintage. So you actually expand the pool of Black Lotuses you have, but you don't hurt the secondary market. That would be a great thing to do.
Hmm. I don't really know.
What, no opinions?
No, it's just... I mean, those decks weren't... Those things never were intended to be playable, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, why not?
I mean, sure, why not, but... I mean, yeah, Vintage is already too expensive, and... But I don't... Yeah, that would increase the... That will increase the number of Black Lotuses and other cards available, but I don't really see it. Yeah, I don't really see that lowering any prices too soon.
It'll enable some more people to play Vintage because...
Yeah, people that got those cards and they're just like sitting at home.
I mean, what are you going to do with those cards?
I mean, those cards were just for like people to like... try out the top deck and then try to build it theirself, right?
Yeah, but now that Vintage is actually getting more in demand, but because of the Vintage Super League and all that, but people can't play it because of things like that. I mean, they can play it on MTGO, but still.
Hmm.
Yeah, and MTGO Vintage is actually kind of accessible because the Black Lotus is just $200. Not... I mean, that is just $200.
Yeah.
So when Black Lotus is just $200, you can imagine that all the other prices are cheaper, so you can actually build a Vintage deck kind of cheaply.
Yeah, kind of cheaply, comparing to real life.
You don't have to sell your wife and kids and your house, you just have to sell your wife and kids.
That's a fair trade.
And again, we don't really endorse anything we say on this podcast, so just to be sure, for that whole you should kill your opponent if you're playing a low row and sell your kids in slavery... We're not actually condoning that.
Yeah, it's called joking.
I mean, we sound so serious about it, and because we're all ironic and sarcastic all the time, I really don't know if people can actually spot the difference, and I really have to preface it.
Yeah, sure. Preach it, bro.
Plus, people on the internet always have something to get riled about, and I don't want to give them any reason to be riled about this podcast, so, you know.
No.
It's so, not like, yeah. It's not like
we're in for
that huge podcasting anything. Money. For that huge podcasting check we get every month?
Yeah, that you gotta get that podcasting dinero, yo.
Yeah, I mean, if the Manipool doesn't make any money, and they've been in it for like 7 years, 8 years already, podcasting nonstop, I don't think we're going to get any money out of this.
Eh, I wouldn't worry about it.
I really don't even try to connect money and this podcast in a single sentence, except that this podcast doesn't make any money.
Well, yeah, unless we start being sponsored, which we probably won't.
Let's face it, we don't have a content that we sponsor yet, so you know. Anywho, I think this has been episode of the Elder Dragon Dirtle podcast.
This is episode...
It's supposed to be 5.
Yeah, something like that.
However...
It's actually 3.
This is sad.
And the last one was really good.
So, for the next episode, I think we're going to have Peter from Next to the Ghost of Town blog again, because that episode got scrapped. And it was a really good episode, I really liked having him along. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to come whenever. So whenever we make a schedule, he's going to show there.
Oh yeah, that was also that part when I wasn't available because...
Yep.
I was talking too much against the Emperor, and then he broke my IP.
Yes. And you're going to get to meet him finally. He's a really stand-up guy, and he's going to wake up at 5 a.m. again, just for us.
Yay.
And I'm going to see if we can get Adam, a.k.a. Dragona77 from Twitch, to show up again. Because, you know, recording software.
Yeah, I'm guessing he'll understand.
I hope that the listeners aren't too pissed at us. I mean, I would understand if they are, but chill, we're back now. We're going to make content each week now.
At least we'll try.
If the machines don't rebel against us.
Well, trust in the machine spirit.
And the Emperor. So, this has been episode... And as always, the Emperor Products.
Yes.
Okay, toi.